Bonsoir à tous, bonsoir, j'espère que vous allez bien, j'espère que vous avez passé une bonne journée, c'est Alzi, bienvenue sur la chaîne Magicien de la Communication. Ce soir, j'ai le plaisir d'accueillir Brian Germain qui vient des États-Unis et qui va nous parler de la peur. Il est keynote speaker, conférencier et il travaille aussi beaucoup sur le coaching de la peur, puisqu'il est expert aussi en navigation sous voile, en parachutisme en fait. Et donc, il va nous expliquer un petit peu quel est son parcours. Et en tout cas, je suis très content de l'accueillir puisque moi aussi, je fais du parachutisme. C'est une passion, un sport qui m'a permis effectivement de comprendre beaucoup de choses, de débloquer beaucoup de choses sur ma peur à moi, parce que je pouvais avoir parfois être peureux sur certaines choses, et du coup ça m'a permis de débloquer certaines choses. Du coup je suis très heureux d'accueillir ce soir du coup Brian Germain. Hello Brian, how are you?
Hello, I'm glad to be here, thanks for having me.
Thank you very much for being here. Everybody, you can of course ask any questions if you want to in the chat. For now, I'm so happy to have you. Maybe I'll let you present yourself. To the listeners, so we can talk more about your journey afterwards.
Sure. Well, depending on who you are, I'm kind of I've got different hats that I wear, right? So for some people, I'm their fear coach, so helping people deal with all kinds of fear and sort of getting up out of depression, which is related for sure. Often our depression is just sort of a disguise for the fact that we're afraid to try. Not always, of course. Okay. But so I've got lots of people from sort of, you know, all levels of life, from very, very high functioning people who are very, very successful that I've worked with, and some folks that are literally just trying to get out of bed, right? And I also have this other aspect of myself, which is a professional skydiver. I've been jumping out of airplanes for 35 years. And I've been teaching for much of that time. I've got about 16,000 jumps. And so that has helped inform my research on how to help people deal with fear, my own experiences, and also through helping other people. Right? So when you're in the airplane and you look at somebody's eyes, you know, somebody with very few jumps, and they just look terrified and you can't hold a conversation with them, and you tell a joke and they don't laugh, right? Then you know that this person's really, really nervous. That or your joke is bad, but that couldn't possibly be the case with me, you know. So it's been very interesting as a laboratory. Skydiving and other adventure sports, I'm involved with lots of them. It's a laboratory for me to try different methods of helping people deal with fear, to find out what doesn't work. Often my instinct in terms of action is not maybe compassionate enough, because I've got so many jumps, right? Sometimes my response is, oh, don't worry about it. Let's just go and do it anyway. When the person needs a completely different approach, an individual, right? They're each separate people. There is no one size fits all solution. So that's a big part of what I do, right? So I write books about both topics, about skydiving and about dealing with fear. And articles, and I make a lot of videos. I've lost track of how many videos that I've made, but over 500, many of which are on YouTube. And many of my instructional videos are on Adventure Wizard, the website.
Cool, very cool. So very broad so that, approach of fear and skydiving.
Yeah. It's very related, isn't it? I mean, you're a jumper. You know what I'm talking about. Is that there is the fear of death in skydiving. There's also the fear of looking stupid, making a mistake. You know, looking like you don't know what you're doing, and then losing respect from the people around you. That's a valid reason to be afraid as well. You know, a big message that I try to share with everybody that I work with is being afraid is normal. It's how you deal with it. Yeah. If you don't have fear when you're in high stakes, in high danger kind of situations, maybe it's not physical danger, but it could very well be something else where you're risking losing your money. You know, you're risking losing, like I say, respect and you know the opinions of others, that kind of thing. Performance anxiety. You know, a lot of people are terrified to give a talk, to speak in front of others. And that's, I think it's one of the most common fears. And yep. You know, they're not going to stone you to death, right? If you make a miss words, misstep, or you say something that, okay, it's possible you'll offend your audience. I've done that a few times, you know, but you're really dealing with mostly an emotional risk. It's real for you.
Yeah.
And the limbic system, the parts of the brain that causes the physical response, which cause the sort of the next thoughts that happen as a result of that body environment, that mood, changes where the thoughts go, which changes your capabilities. And so the limbic system doesn't know the difference between a physical risk and, you know, you're going to play your you know, trumpet in front of, you know, a large group of people. Right, you're gonna sit down at open mic night at a cafe with your guitar and actually sing a song that you wrote. Right, that's, you know, it's emotionally charged and it's beautiful, right? If we can't stand up to that kind of test, what are we going to become as a species? Right, so private, so we call it breasting your cards, you know, in poker where you hide your cards, where you're not showing your light. You're not showing your beauty. The world will become very gray and boring if people don't stand up to that kind of fear. So that's kind of what I represent is taking deliberate, careful, well thought out risks. And some of the risks are physical, as a metaphor, where you go rock climbing, you know, and you climb and you get a little bit excited and learn to relax yourself. A process of you deliberately breathe. Slower, bigger. You deliberately relax your body. You deliberately smile, even though you don't feel like smiling, you know? And you get yourself into this sort of, woohoo, this is exciting. Or you're paddling with the wave like a surfer, harder, instead of fighting against it, you know, resisting the energy where you make things worse. And you don't, your flower doesn't open, so to speak. You know what I mean? And so these are all tests and opportunities.
All right. So you're an engineer of fear and you help people find their own mechanism. And actually, it's very, very interesting because you talk about when it gets emotional, there are different means. It can be money, it can be performance, but it's always real into people's head. And so you say how to deal with fear. So maybe we'll get that in just a moment, because I wanted to ask you, when was your first jump and were you afraid? How did you deal with the fear at that first jump?
Yeah, April 13th, 1986 was the date of my first jump. It would have been April 12th, but it snowed and we couldn't get the airplane in the air. So this was up on the Canadian border near Quebec. And so it was, for me, I was 18 years old, right? I was a kid. And I was the kind of kid who didn't really let fear stop me, or at least fear of physical risks. I was a ski racer. You know what I mean? I was a mountain climber. I like caving. I had done all kinds of stuff like that, where the physical risk was just something that it was simple, right? You know how to solve the problem. You close the carabiner and you lock the gate. You know what I mean? You check your handles before you jump out of the airplane. These are very specific tasks that make you safer. You know you're safer when you clip into the rope, right? And so the fear starts to go away. And so for me, the actual jump was, it fell in that category. So honestly, I wasn't that scared. I was excited. It was all very, very positive. There was a lot of energy. It's not like it was an inert emotional experience. I was elated. My whole life led up to this. When I was a very young child, I remember getting in trouble all the time at the swing set because I'd jump off the swings. I called it the parachute game. From the time I was like 5 years old, I was dreaming of becoming a skydiver. So for me, this was the unfoldment of a dream. And so there was so much sort of inertia, emotional energy rolling in that direction that it was easy for me. I'm asking out the girl that I really, really wanted to ask out, that was hard for me. It was a different channel of reality where as I built up my courage through skydiving and took on challenges within that, I was motivated to sort of move forward into the areas of skydiving that did scare me beyond my first jump. I think it helped me in a lot of other ways in my life. To take on the challenges of a normal person, if you will, and help push back some of those other barriers. Looking the bully in the eyes, to speak clearly to people who you consider an authority figure, a professor in university or something like that, and not be so meek, not be so sort of fear-driven where you're quiet and not bold. So I think skydiving for me was very, very positive in that way. As is all the high-risk stuff that I love to do.
Yeah, and now you teach also. You're so a professional skydiver. You teach and you coach people as well to skydive AFF as well, or mostly piloting and navigation.
Yeah, well, I've done a lot of primary skydiving instruction. I've done a lot of tandems and AFF, thousands of that stuff.
Okay.
But lately, I'm mostly focused on helping people to fly their parachutes better. So in terms of teaching the navigation, the pattern and accuracy, secret stuff, how to land beautifully, that's a big part of what I teach. But also to how to fly in formation. We put radios on, just like we do in the Skydive VR. You can talk to the person. Can you please come 45 degrees left, or something like this? It makes a big difference if you can talk. So we use now radios. So I'll put radios on my students two-way, where we can talk in the sky. We'll fly our parachutes in formation for the duration of the jump. We're doing leapfrogging and switching positions and spiraling together, and it's magnificent,
Yeah, and
and
it's
it
to
helps
be
people.
synchronized and communicated the right way as well to do exactly what needs to be done.
And it's wonderful. It's wonderful. Once you do that, you suddenly this whole world opens where you thought you were skydiving, and you were doing lots of great things, worth writing home about. But when you do this and you realize, gosh, if we can talk, there's this next level of possibility that exists. And it's not just about instructions. Hey, let's fly north or something like that. It's more me being able to share an emotion. I'm flying with somebody that has 30 jumps, who's kind of nervous. I can fly in formation with them, maybe 100 feet away, and I say, I want you to take a big deep breath in now with me, all the way in, and now hold it. Now, as you let it out, I want you to relax your whole body. Slowly let that air out. Relax your feet. Know what I mean? Relax your ears. Relax everything in your body so that you feel back in your body, or here and now. Now, I'm going to come a little closer. Don't worry about it. This is no big deal. You know me, right? I know what I'm doing. I've never hurt anybody before. I'm good at this. can trust me. Now I'm going to come a little closer. All right, see, that's no big deal. Now I want you to come a little closer. It's up to you. Say the best way to, for a first kiss is if you move over near them and you let them close the rest of the distance, because then it was voluntary. It's like that. It's like, just come, you do the last little bit of it and they feel in control. And it has allowed me to transform hundreds of people from parachute weight to parachute pilot, somebody that feels empowered to canopy. And it's a wonderful thing. I love it. I love it. And this is I plan on continuing to do that kind of thing for the rest of my life. It's kind of it's one aspect of my calling.
Yeah, because the canopy navigation aspect can be overdone and quite quick, and actually the most important one when you need to land safe on Earth. And myself, I had some issue with canopy piloting, and it's interesting how you said that when you take more control about this, which sometimes feels overwhelming, you actually take control about your life, kinda, and you get back control. So in that part, skydiving, as you said, can help you a lot in other dimensions in daily life, actually. So what would you tell people that are afraid to skydive? Maybe you have one advice, but also people who are afraid of doing something. So maybe we can go more into the part where how to deal with fear, and maybe you have some good advice about that.
I have a lot more than we have time for. It's kind of what I do. The core concept that to build off of is that if you can assume, and most people can, that your fundamental desire is to survive. It's as a living being to continue on, and okay, ultimately biologically we say to breathe, is the organism's ultimate function is the gene's way of making more genes. Most people believe that's biologically true, but I think that there is this burning desire to solve your problems so that you can survive. If you focus on that, if you focus on the fear's voice within the mind, ultimately it is intending to do that, to help you survive, to draw your attention towards danger so you don't forget about it. Sort of lights the danger on fire and puts Christmas lights on and says, don't look away from the ground that's coming, or the other cars on the road, or the other skiers on the mountain, and people brace for impact. Problem that we need to sort of awaken to is that fear goes too far. Fear is like an alarm in a building that is saying, there's a fire, there's a fire, there's a fire. It doesn't solve the problem. It doesn't put out the fire. And it doesn't get you out of the building to safety. All it does is let you know that there's something going on. So the visceral sensations in the body, the heart rate going faster, right? The body gearing up with energy, right? All of that stuff is fundamentally beautiful, and you can love yourself for feeling it. You also have to recognize that it's not helping beyond that first 1 second information that you're in danger. Some point early on, hopefully, when we recognize, oh, I don't feel good, I feel afraid, now what? What do I need to do to reduce my danger? And it doesn't mean that I'm going to step out of the danger. It doesn't mean that I'm going to stop skiing down the mountain. I might choose to expand my awareness to include my body and to remember that my positive emotion gives my body the true power, the true balance, the true foresight to look beyond this moment into what is next, the solutions that I have to create with my mind. That is that joyful experience of empowerment. That's where the safety lies. It's not in the fear. Fear pretends to be protecting you, and it's not. look at the person walking on ice, nervous, fall down. The fear didn't save them. The fear just said, by the way, there is a potential reality, right? An offshoot from this present moment. There's many offshoots from this present moment. In this moment, I recognize that there's a danger. Little kids, they don't necessarily recognize that they're a danger, right? They'll pick up the big knife and go, wee, look at the knife, and the parents come running, oh, no, because they didn't realize what that knife could do. It doesn't mean that a knife should never be used, because a knife is a tool. A parachute is a tool. Emotion is a tool, right? And a lot of times people shy away from negative emotion, anger in particular, one of the most empowering emotions, will turn it off in order to be sort of convenient and polite to the people around us. What does that fear cost us? Our voice, our truth. We don't stand up and say what needs to be said. Maybe not in the mood that it first came up, right? That might be destructive. But the fear of your voice causes you to not change the world into what you believe it should be. And so all of this stuff comes back down to the same idea that I'm thankful for the emotional response. I'm thankful for the information that comes into my body that says, I feel the squeeze in here. Oh, something's not right. I'm about to parachute off a cliff. What did I forget? What did I forget? Right. And so that thought process of what did I forget can either make me feel bad for the whole jump, or it can cause me to methodically go top to bottom. I have a helmet. I close my visor. Is my GoPro on? Is my chin strap on? Is it zipped up? Is my wingsuit, zipped up? Is my chest strap on? Do I have my leg straps on? I go top to bottom and I get to the end of that methodical list. And then I go, oh, I did it. I'm safer now because I took the time. My fear said, you're not safe. And it caused me to go through this ritual process. It made me feel safer. And now I can green light my joy, green light the mood where my skill lives. My skill is what's ultimately going to save me. Like my sort of style, my savvy, my ability to be creative, parts of the brain that get shut off when we're in a high level of fear response. Front part of the brain, willed action, the imagination of the possibilities beyond the, oh shit, that's how I'm going to die. Oh, that's how I'm going to survive. Here's another way I could survive. Here's another way that I could survive. That envisioning is a beautiful function of the human brain. Very creative, but we're not creative when we're scared. We have attack, fight, we have retreat. Which is we call flight, right? Fight and flight. And then we have hide, So the three Fs, but I'm going to add the other one, right? So the freeze, the fight, and the flight. There's also freak out, is the other F. Just freak out. Lose your mind, lose your happiness, make everybody else's life miserable because you're, in this terrified state where you're flicking between the other ones, right? You're attacking in anger. Because you can't see out of the door of the airplane, the green light's on, and you want to go because you want to jump out of the airplane over the airport, but that guy's not leaving, and he's stopping you from leaving because he's in the door. Maybe he sees that there's an airplane underneath your airplane. Maybe he sees that there's something out there. You're not where you should be. The pilot was wrong to turn on the green light, right? You don't know that information, but your fear is causing you. That's the fight instinct, and it's normal, and you got to forgive yourself for it. For all the fears, possible mental responses, you got to forgive it. You have to just say, yep, that is my sort of old caveman brain. We say reptilian brain, but I think a caveman is a better description here. Give me a second. Because I'm not convinced that reptiles have full spectrum of emotion that we have when we're afraid. They're not so colorful. in terms of the, you know, the okay, I understand fighting and running away and hiding for danger, but with humans, it's a little more complicated than that. That might be the root of each of those directions, but when you look at how humans are sort of ne our natural predispositions, our predictability, we become very controllable from an outside perspective as well, which is why I believe we were taught fear. We were trained into it to a certain degree because it makes us much more manageable. The barking sheepdog makes the sheep go where, you know, where the sheepdog wants them to go. And we need to sort of rise up out of that stuff, think for ourselves, and sort of recognize that, oh, I'm having this Pavlov's dog, you know, response to fear. You know, I read something, I hear something, get triggered emotionally. Now I'm going to step up out of that battleground, go, well, what's the best case scenario? How could this go better? I understand what my ego would want to do. I understand what my first thoughts naturally are to, you know, do what somebody reading off of a script would do. You know what I mean? If you're playing a part in a movie, well, then the character yells at the other character, and then the second character yells back at the first one. Of course he did, right? Tit for tat. But what if we were to go beyond that? What if we were to rise up out of that stuff and go, well, what if this went really, really well? What if there was an enlightened person in the room, you know, in my own mind?
So
And
fear,
so that's what I'm trying to help. Yeah.
is against us. You told about its many shapes, and what I loved, I wrote many sentences from your website, and I saw this one was, who would we be without our fear? Who would you be without your fear? So how do you think fear is inherent to humans, and that everything is scary at first.
I think that we're born with a the ability to sense with our emotions what is the right way to go and what's the wrong way to go. And I think fear is just hanging Christmas lights on the way you don't want to go. It's sending a spotlight and it drawing attention. And so here's as a metaphor, you know this from skydiving, when you have a very nervous student, they're landing in a field that has only one tree. They can't take their eyes off of that one tree, and they will naturally be drawn towards that tree. Now, they may or may not hit it, but they will land closer to it because they are fixating their mind on it. So everything that fear sort of illuminates in terms of a danger, there has to be this higher enlightened perspective that says, all right, thank you for the information, but I'm not staring at the things that I don't want. I know the answer is to look at the spaces between things, opportunities for success. How do I shift out of the problem mindset to the solution mindset? So I won't say that fear is bad. It's, it's just information. It's information. If you take that information too far, you can end up with a stampede in your mind, a stampede of panic.
Yeah, we're
And
somewhat.
so I won't say that fear is bad. I just think fear is bad past about 2 seconds of the experience.
All right, and so I wanted to ask you because it's really interesting. You say really perspective a lot, and I think fear is. I guess how we could help people is how to tell them how to deal with fear. And how to change perspective. You kind of already gave an answer, which was breathing, which could be a good solution. Do you have some others?
It's the breathing is the beginning. It's so the father of modern psychology, William James, he said that if we change the state of the body, right, the emotional moment, the experience subjectively, and we change the thoughts that we have access to. So imagine you're rock climbing up a wall. Which direction do you want to go? When maybe one way is a dead end and the other way is the way through. So it's about having that bigger perspective of where you're going. And so the fear process changes the state of the mind. It contracts it, and you can't reach as far, right? Imagine somebody on the rock climbing, and they're in this little ball. You can't get to the next hole. Whereas if you relax and loosen up, now you've got latitude, right? And so if we were to then look at it from what James was pointing out, is that if you, for instance, are nervous when you're walking down a dark city street at night, you're all alone. If you start walking faster, the point is, you'll become more afraid. The way you're using the energy in the body changes the experience. Then the quantum physics professor comes in and says, by the way, it looks to us now that the mood that you're carrying is changing the quantum possibilities right there in front of you. So now you will rendezvous with the mugger, guy with the knife. You're going to rendezvous with things that provoke the emotion that you're already experiencing because it's compatible. As opposed to the person, William James asserted, that chooses to slow down as they're walking, chooses to relax their feet as they walk, chooses to breathe bigger and slower and appreciate the beauty of the night. Maybe you hear some birds, chirping at night, or you hear some frogs, or you see some starlight. By changing the mood, you change what's occurring within your body, and then quite possibly, if you believe in quantum physics, as a religion, there's different future available to you. And so why is it that the nervous skydiving students have bigger problems, more problems? Maybe the quantum physics researchers are right. There is an effect to how we're experiencing our reality, and there is also fundamentally, the spiritualists would tell you have a choice about which mental avenue you go. And there is something in between first gear, second gear, third gear, right? Called neutral. Now, I'm a fan of people cultivating their ability to bring their car stick shift back into neutral and sort of coast with your reality. You sort of soften the body, and the breathing is the beginning. And then once you start to feel a little bit more ease and flow, then you reach out with your mind and go, and think to yourself, well, what would be better than where I am? What would be better than where I'm coasting towards? It's not my destiny, it's just my destination. Destination is a temporary experience. It's got freedom in it. We have free will to alter, but what people tend to do is they get married to it, they get stuck on it, and they can't look away. And that's true not just of the moment-to-moment experiences, but the way that we live our lives. Careers, the people that we draw into our lives, it becomes solidified so much that we forget that we have free will. The TV shows that we traumatize ourselves with, and the movies that are horribly, sort of grotesque or terrifying, and sort of a future for humanity that's all negative, right? There's so much of that stuff because the movie makers think that that's what we want. But what happens to the mind when we pattern ourselves with repetitively negative imagery? Become it. Then we become a projector of it, a creator of it.
Yeah, and that's the truth. Like, sometimes fear appears about something somebody told us. We haven't lived it, and we still create fear about something we have never done. Like public speaking, you were talking about before, which is the number one fear of everyone before death, actually.
And it has been quite a while, I think, since people were, stoned to death because of what they said up on a podium or into a microphone. Or, I mean, it's probably been more than 50 years since people used to throw tomatoes. Remember that? If they didn't like your performance, they'd throw tomatoes. All of that stuff is gone, but we do have it on Facebook. We do have it on in our social media. So now there becomes this fear of being censored by our friends where they don't like us anymore, and possibly censored by the, you know, the system.
Yeah.
You know, maybe perhaps it's all just sort of automatic keyword stuff that gets you in trouble because you mentioned something that's not okay. But there's fear along those lines as well. So how do we avoid being sort of stifled, gagged, right? I mean, it seems like right now there's what a great metaphor, people walking around the world with masks over their faces, gagged. Of course, you know, you can wear that gag proudly and say, I'm protecting somebody's grandma from getting killed by my exhale because I'm so healthy that I can have COVID and not feel it, right? I'm virile, you know, and maybe that's true for you, but not for the 98-year-old grandma who people would like to see at the next, you know, Christmas or Hanukkah or whatever, right? So there's that same thing going on in the internet where people are shutting up, in my opinion, a little too much. They need to just say, I'm going to find a way to communicate what I believe in a positive way, not a fear-inducing source. Right? I'm not going to be a fear-monger, but I'm going to speak my truth. I'm going to do it what I believe is the right thing to do. Just a little bit before when they attacked the Capitol here in the U.S.,
yeah.
I was there.
Yeah.
I felt compelled. And I went there by myself late at night so that I, you know, run into trouble. And I sat there and I could feel it coming. You know, I was up there praying for peace at the Capitol right before that happened. I was drawn to do it. Oh. And after it happened, I was at the National Monument, the Washington National Monument, 3 o'clock in the morning. So I wouldn't get in trouble. You know, I had to walk like 2 miles or something to get there from my car. 3 o'clock in the morning, I'm up there sort of, you know, meditating and recording myself talking about peace. Talking about unity, and laying down our swords, that kind of thing, but not shutting up our mouths. You know what I mean? I still think we need to speak our truth, and so that was a very scary thing to do. I felt purposeful.
Yeah, you think you think people have more fear because they don't verbalize enough, either being afraid or being themselves.
I think the silence stands on our chest like a gorilla. It's not healthy.
Okay.
Human beings are supposed to speak up, but we don't necessarily speak up with the I guess you could call it a mood quality to what we're saying. Right? You can package the information in a way that is very productive, accomplishes the goal that you wanted to, or you can do it in an ego way, in an angry way, in a fear-based way, which makes things worse. That's what I call complaining. You know, bitching, fetching, where you're just saying it's the problem, and you're not expecting the solution. That's not helping. Okay? So I think we need to recognize the difference between those two and find a way to speak up in a way that's not ego-based, that's not separation-based, good guys and bad guys. There's only right ways and wrong ways, or preferred ways and not preferred ways. And I think we're going to be able to solve the world's problems through that kind of conversations. Not afraid to speak up, but also smart enough to not make enemies.
So do you think, you talked about fear like an energy, like an emotions as well, like quantum physics, and you think that for most people, fear is like automated, and you, mm-hmm. for example, you started talking with it, and you said, okay, you're automated, but when you want to intervene, we will decide together and decide if it's for real or not, something like that.
I like that. Yes. Yeah. You put a face to it. To the old brain having a conversation with the new brain. You know, sort of the new brain to me is love-based and creativity-based and oneness, unity-based, right? It heals. It can draws together. It cooperates. And then you have this other side, which is the fear-based, very selfish, warring old world. It's the old reality of humanity that's been around for thousands or millions of years, and it's not constructive, and yet it's not completely wrong in all occasions. Sometimes you're being chased by a bear, and you can't hug it out. You know what I mean? Your parachute has malfunctioned. You can't, you know, ohm and make it open. You're going to have to cut away and dump your reserve, and you got to pull hard with energy. Excuse me. And so I think that this is a very important distinction. Not throw the baby out with bathwater.
Yeah,
recognize that the old ways, the body, the power, the limbic system is part of our survival. And if we had no fear, we had no ego, we would die. We wouldn't be able to survive in this place of, you know, this earth with ego's playground. Or it is a little bit dog eat dog. If you don't get what you need, you die. Yep. It's true.
Yep.
If you want to live a completely angelic existence, you know, you'll be skinny like Gandhi. Everything will be, you know, oh, not for me. I don't need anything here. I'm going to give everything away. Or at least that's what we've been led to believe that a spiritual being acts like. And you're going to be in this world hanging by a thread. So I think the ego empowers us to stay alive, get what we need. The question is, what's the we? I think we have too small a we. Need to expand into team we, and realize that team we goes all the way to the horizon. That nobody gets to really have a good day. If you're a truly compassionate person, somebody else is having a bad day. We all need to sort of take care of each other and pull each other up, so that there's no problems. I mean, certainly that could come off like socialism, but that's not what I mean. I just mean compassion, caring, and using that power to solve the world's problems.
Yeah, use that energy as you were talking about. Like, it's the energy, and then it can freeze you if you don't know what to do with it, but actually can also give you the key to open other doors to other realities. Which is like an exercise you need to create all the time, and maybe skydiving as well has taught you some other discipline and some methodological thinking to manage fear a little bit more. But it is a sport, and you're professional as well that mostly has developed many skills. Expert on fear, but also many aspects on safety, and also on teaching and to transmit what you know and how to transmit it, because not everybody can learn the same way as well, and that's also why maybe sometimes they're afraid. Thank you very much for all this this talk about fear. Maybe before we close, what are your projects for later? What are you working on? Do you want to share with us some advertising just for your books as well? Let me know. I will write down everything. And
yeah, I should have had a stack of books next to me here. But yeah, well, I've written a bunch of Transcending Fear is one of my more popular books. And it's not specific to skydivers.
Sure.
It's just getting people thinking about what we've been talking about here today and going into greater depth. And there's a big resources section in the back, references section. So I'm hoping that people will go to those references and read on, you know, find these other books. That's what I intended for that book to be about, is to, you know, we say that the mind is not a cup to be filled, but a fire to be lit. So I'm just trying to light the fire of people's awareness of how fear has been sort of always there in their lives, everybody, and how it was sort of shackling them, holding them back, and how we can change that, right? How are you going to command your consciousness to act differently, to have that moment of awakening, to rise up out of the battlefield, to solve problems in a way that are truly, truly constructive, not ego-based, not fear-based. So that's part of it. I'm continuing on with the skydiving stuff, and I make a lot of instructional videos, and I've written some very popular books. One of my best sellers, The Parachute and Its Pilot, continues to sell very well. A big thick book, it's, you know, huge. And people, you know, read that book and they go, wow, that was great. I need another book to explain this book, you know, because I do get into the aerodynamics and the physics, the vectors and all that. Not as much as I could have, but it's more than most skydivers have learned, you know, at home at the drop zone. So I made a series of videos, started off with 7 videos teaching people about the fundamental stuff that I wish they were taught when they began, but they weren't taught. I wasn't either, you know, because I've spent many, many years designing, building, and testing parachutes. I've built hundreds upon hundreds of prototype parachutes that I've tested myself. I've learned a lot. You know, I've built, you know, thousands of parachutes for other people. I continue to do that. And so the information that I've gathered through test flight, I put into these instructional videos, I put it into the books and all that. And so I continue then to do, I run groups. So I've got a live group now every Wednesday evening for European time. So for me, it's midday. And I have one on Thursday evening US time, where I've got a group of skydivers and we talk about all kinds of stuff, whatever comes up for them. And they'll share their videos of their recent jumps or something. And I'll, you know, put on the VR goggles and I'll take them for a flight. You know, we'll go jump in different places and we'll talk about the various dynamics. Very, very helpful. Skydive VR is one of the greatest breakthroughs, technologically speaking, that we've ever experienced in skydive. It really is. And it's in its infancy. I'm sure you can speak to that one. It's wonderful.
Yeah, I love that, and I think virtual reality has helped many and will help many things for training because when you just get into the headset, it takes maybe 5 seconds for your brain to take you there, and that's the beauty magic of it. And I think there are so many things to come. It's gonna be even better. It's only the beginning, so.
Yeah, it's becoming easier to become a skydiver. You can close that gap little by little. And then when you finally, after all of this training, you feel ready, and the day comes that you put a parachute on and you go jump out of the plane, you're going to feel like you've done it before. I mean, that's my job as an instructor, where everything feels like it clicks into place and you're just, you know, gliding down this experience that you've already pre-paved in your mind with truly adequate training. In the way that an astronaut, you know, they push the buttons, they do the thing, you're like, yeah, I've done this so many times. Now I'm just finally getting to, you know, that last little synapse between vision and reality. Reality. It's a tricky word, isn't it? That's what I'm trying to accomplish. So I do that stuff, and I do, you know, virtual speaking, and I do one-on-one, a lot of one-on-one coaching. Stuff with all kinds of people, sometimes just skydiving, sometimes just fear, sometimes both. And I'm happy to work with anybody anywhere. So it's the COVID thing started off as the worst thing that ever happened to all of us. And for me, I've just decided to leverage the situation. Now that people are a little more open to getting what they need through the computer. And so now I can regular coaching with people on the other side of the planet. It's really fun.
Yeah, that's really cool. All right.
Of course, I'm looking forward to coming to France and jumping a gap
You're
soon. But
welcome. Now I'm in the south in Marseille, so you can come and we'll jump to Gap or wherever. But first, we'll maybe do some jumps in virtual reality later at some point. It'll be really cool.
yes, we will. Yes, we will. Absolutely. I look forward to that. Well, thanks so much for having me. I think this show is great.
Thank you, Brian.
and I'm really pleased to have the opportunity.
Thank you very much. Thank you for all that. And of course, everybody can go to your YouTube channel where you'll put some more videos, but you have already many of them talking about fear and talking about how to transcend it, how to become your better self, kind of. And I think to conclude, I just wanted to tell you something that as a teacher, as a coach, I think when you said that your job is to make everything fluid and there is no bumps at all, maybe that those are the little bumps you can notice that will create some fear afterwards, and that I'm sure that you have the eye to close that right away when you see one as a student and say, okay, maybe I need to do that and that. So it's also a really an observation, perspective mode, a lot of interesting stuff to think about and to overcome your fears. Thank you again. I wish you a very good day, and I will conclude there. Thank you, Brian. Bye.
You're welcome. Thank you all for watching.
Bye. Ciao. Ooh, merci, merci à tous de nous avoir suivis. C'était vraiment, vraiment très sympa de parler avec Brian, de découvrir un petit peu à cet univers de comment le parachute a pu débloquer sa vision de la peur, comment il parle avec la peur, comment il en a fait aussi son métier du coup pour coacher les gens. En tout cas, si ça vous intéresse, bah, vous pouvez aller voir toutes ses vidéos. Vous pouvez aller voir son site Adventure Wisdom. Moi, je vous souhaite une très très bonne soirée. Demain, on va faire une pas une interview, une émission surprise en réalité virtuelle, puisqu'on ira dans le monde des autres réalités. C'est une expérience qui est complètement gratuite. Voilà, je vous présenterai ça. En tout cas, je vous souhaite une très très bonne soirée. Et puis, je vous dis à demain, 19h. 19h, ouais, c'est ça. Ciao, ciao, bye.